You are listening to a podcast of the Geek.io Media Network. For all of our shows and more, visit geek-io.net. And to help support the network, head over to patreon.com/geek.io.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to Life of an Accounting Droid. I'm your host, as always, Neil, bringing you episode number 89. So I got a rather quick episode for you guys this week, but we'll have all the usual segments except for the Star Wars review. But in its place, I will have an extra review. So I have a game review for this week and a service review. So that should hopefully make up for it. And then the usual entertainment news and a TV show review to round it out. And I will actually mention one funny bit of, or one, I don't know, it's not just, I got a little bit of humor that's Star Wars related, so I'll talk about that in the entertainment segment. So with that, I'll jump right into the theme, which is royalty. So that is a payment to the owner for use of their property to generate personal profit. So you may find that someone else owns the patent or copyright to a particular process, method, tool, feature, anything like that, and in order for you to use that, you need to pay that person money or royalty or some sort of agreed upon amount of money in order to use it. And property like this is usually under patent or copyright. I'm not in that field, so I'm not sure if it's, there can be instances where someone owns something and you make an agreement on the side even though they don't use it, but you may want to use it and give them their due respect and support for using their product, so you pay some sort of royalty. It is usually a percentage of revenue, so if you, for example, make $100 using that process or service or tool or whatever, you may give, let's say, 1% of that to the owner of whatever you are using of theirs over a period, over the life of using that tool or product or service or whatever. So that person will get that benefit as well, because they are, you are using their property. I didn't really see any case or specific case or instance where it may be a fixed dollar amount. So for example, let's say $50 over the life of the product, or let's say $50 per year or some other fixed dollar amount, but I don't see a case where that would not be a problem or something that could happen as well. This sort of agreement or royalties are made binding under a licensing agreement. So it is written out, or specific written out terms saying, for whatever amount of sales or revenue you generate, you're going to pay that person a fixed percentage of money, or over the course of this number of years, you're going to pay this amount of money. So when that contract ends, you do either have to stop using it, or you do have to negotiate a new contract and say, okay, for this next period of time, you are going to pay this new amount of money. And of course, it could be, change according to current market conditions, current product sales, current business environment, and things like that. So with that being said, I will jump right into this week's tech news. Not too much to go on this or talk about this week, but Google Wi-Fi is adding a new feature called Scheduled Pause. This basically turns off access to the internet to help you wind down the day or make time for homework, or let's say it's dinner time and you don't want access to internet, no one playing on their phones or tablets or anything like that, then it'll disable access to the internet on at the router level. So that means it's time to focus on those specific things. So definitely good to help train kids to do train kids to stop using their devices at certain times, or have this that little bit of control if you know that you don't want access to the internet at those specific times. This week, Google also launched a new site / feature and service called PAX. That's PAX. It's a new royalty-free cross-licensing agreement for Android and Google applications on qualified devices. So they're teaming up with various manufacturers and device makers to basically, when their manufacturers are using Android-based features and services, that Google will provide royalty-free services on their end, and the companies that sign on with under PAX will provide the related services and features royalty-free on their end. So I think there's certain manufacturers like Samsung and LG and a few others, but don't quote me on that. I actually didn't refresh my memory off the top of my head or recently, but There are a few companies on that, so it's basically to help build Android and not have things like money get in the way of that and reduce the cost on that end as well. And finally, Google announced that the fact check tag that was in limited rollout on Google News is now going to be expanding globally. So they will have, and this is under for Google News. So when you're visiting, reading articles on Google News, you'll be able to more easily see if those articles are true or not. In a related bit of news, though, they also announced that the fact check tag will be expanded to search. So you'll see a little bit of text underneath your search results saying that the article has been fact checked and contains a fact check tag as far as its accuracy or inaccuracy. So that's all there is for that. So with that, I'll jump into the game review for this week. And it is a game that I saw on the Google app, a free app of the week, and it's called Chameleon Run. So basically the purpose of this game is that, or the point of the game is that it's based as an endless runner, but it does require you to jump through various levels to complete that level. But the difficulty and intricacy doesn't actually end there. It does also require you to change the color of your chameleon in order to complete the level. So you'll find that there's different color levels that you have to stay on, and those are pink and yellow. But there are also different levels to those different level blocks, so they're on a grade. So when you jump, you might land on a yellow platform or a pink platform, which are the colors you can land on. But there's also empty voids that you can fall into to end your life, or black platforms that also do the same thing. So you have to be careful where you land there. When you complete the levels, there is a bonus for completing the level on one single color. So it's not actually a requirement to complete the level on pink and yellow, but it does become more difficult in order to navigate the level on one single color. I have yet to do it myself, but I'm not saying it's impossible. I just haven't done it yet, but there is that bonus as well. It does feature double tapping in order to have a double jump. So if you find you want to get to a lower level, but your jump isn't long enough, as you're falling, you can double tap to fall, but then also re-jump to make it to that platform. And then you can also long press on your screen, so you do get a longer jump all at once. You can do a high jump that lets you go for a longer distance. Performance and graphics wise, it is actually super smooth. I am using my OnePlus 3T, and it does use pixelated graphics, so you're not doing anything overly graphically difficult, but it is super smooth. It is an endless runner, and it is at a slight angle, so it does have a cool side view effect, and it is definitely worth checking out. It is rather challenging, and each level has its own level type. So one level might be, okay, you're just going to do a single run with different colors. Another might be different level platforms. Another one might be a variety of different obstacles and things like that. So it does get a bit complicated and complex, and it is something that to help think about how to complete the level on the fly. And then you can repeat the levels as well if you want to get different chameleons and all that. And you do need a certain number of chameleons in order to get to the next level. So if you find that you're low, you may need to go back and complete other stages as well in order to get into more advanced levels. So the game is available for Android and iOS for $1.99. It was the free app of the week when I did purchase this, and I think it has gone back to regular price, but it is worth playing. It is pretty nifty, and I do like it. It's one of those things that does require coordination and playing to get used to and tricky. And there was, I guess, a saying for Othello that it's easy to learn but takes a while to master. So I definitely do recommend it. And then, as always, I'll have a link in the show notes to the video review so you guys can check it out and see me play through a few different levels to get a general idea of the gameplay. So that's all there is for that. So for that, I'll jump into this week's service review. So this week, Google released YouTube TV to a few select cities in the United States. I think it was like San Francisco, Los Angeles, Chicago, and a couple others. I think Philadelphia or something along those lines. And what they're doing is they're giving a 1-month free trial, so you can sign up, see, and then if you're in one of those areas, you can give it a shot, see how easy it is to use, and if you like it, and if it's worth the $35 a month. So they are sticking to that price for 40 channels, so you get a few local channels like ABC, NBC, Fox, and then you get some sports channels like ESPN, ESPN2, and a few others. And then some other cable channels like Sci-Fi, FX, and several others. So the website has a listing of all 40 channels, so you can see if most of your shows are available on that channel. But from there, the app I found was surprisingly easy and straightforward to use. So I went to the website, I signed up, I enrolled in the 1 month free trial, I selected the credit card that I want to use for the monthly billing, and then it directed me to the app I wanted to install. So it's available in app form for Android and iOS. So I selected that. On the Android side, it does require Android L or higher, so that's Lollipop. On the iOS side, it does require iOS 9.1 or later. I didn't check for specific tablet compatibility, but I assume that it is available. But it is available at least on the smartphone side. So once you once you have it installed, on the website and the app experience are basically identical. The app is, of course, scaled down for your smartphone. But you do basically get the same experience. So you get three tabs. You get the home tab, which is basically new shows, popular shows, shows based on what you watched recently. So you can get recommendations and show feed along those lines. So you can scroll through that, see if there's something that you like and you want to watch. And then you can also dismiss those, like the popular shows tab, if you don't want to see that at the moment. You also get a library tab. So as you're looking for shows, and or if you know shows that you specifically like to watch, like for example, for me, based on the channels that are available, I like Gotham's on Fox, Big Bang Theory on CBS, Expanse on Sci-Fi, MacGyver also on, I want to say CBS, but I forget offhand. But as you're looking for shows, when you pull up the show information in the app or on the website, there will be a plus sign. So when you select or when you touch that plus sign, the show gets added to your library, and any new shows gets added to what they're calling the cloud DVR. So basically, once a show has aired, it'll be added to that cloud DVR. So when you want to watch the show and it's available, for example, if you want to go back and watch a show that aired the previous day, all you have to do is go to your library and you can watch that episode, or you can just search for the show and watch the most recent episode or the past few episodes that are available. Same thing for sports teams. So let's say you're, like for me, I'm a fan of the Los Angeles Angels. So I did the same thing. I hit the plus sign. So now YouTube TV will recommend that. So when I'm looking at previously or recently played games, I'll see it in my DVR in my library, and I can immediately watch that replay. The third tab is a live tab. So these are sounds is shows that are currently airing. So you can scroll through and see whatever's coming on right now. So if you're looking for news or comedy or entertainment or anything like that, you'll be able to see whatever's currently airing. As far as searching, when you do a search, you'll get shows by category, or you can type for a specific show. So if you don't really have anything you want to watch at the moment, but you're in the mood for comedy, you can just do a search for comedy. You can see what's available. Or if you want drama, documentary, movies, or anything like that, you can search by category. So you do get that set top box style experience where you can search by category, see what's coming on right now, and watch that. Or you can, if you see a show that looks interesting but it's not airing right now, you can add it to your library to get upcoming shows, and then also see what else is available as well. As far as how long shows stay in the cloud DVR, they're available for 9 months after the air date. So if a show airs for today, by today I mean April 7th, then it's going to last until basically another 9 months. And then as far as their, I'm saying recording in air quotes, shows get a recording time of an extra minute after the show ends. So if it lasts a little bit long, it'll show up there. Sports get an extra 30 minutes of the broadcast recorded. So if the game runs long, but it's outside of the normal time frame of the game because of overtime or whatever, or extra innings or things like that, then it'll automatically add that time. So if it does go into overtime or whatever, then it'll automatically, or it'll already be a part of that recording. So that's pretty much it. It is actually super simple and straightforward. And as far as I'm concerned, this is basically what a streaming TV service should be. You basically get the same kind of features. I'll compare it to Dish because I do have Dish at home. But if you're subscribed to a Dish streaming service, then the app should be this simple. You shouldn't have to worry. Basically, if you have a package, you should be able to get those channels. I didn't really have to worry about blackout restriction or anything like that. But if there's a channel available and it's televised, then I should be able to find it, find out what's airing right now, easily follow shows and get it added to my DVR, not worry about recording limits. Like I can only record an HD show for 36 hours of HD content or 100 hours of standard content. It's just there, it's available as soon as it's done, and I should be able to watch it anywhere. I just shouldn't have to worry about additional hardware, restrictions, location, anything like that. So in a few months, I may be going on vacation, or I will use a case right now. So I'm watching at home, I should be able to watch at home. I go to work, I should be able to watch on my lunch break. As long as I have an internet connection, I should be able to watch anywhere I go and whatever browser is available to me. The only caveat that I can tell right now is that there's no offline access. So if I do, let's say I do want to watch a show while I'm on a plane, then I'm unable to do that. It does require an internet connection. So maybe that's something that will be coming soon, but it is not available just yet. So something to consider there. But as far as I'm concerned, $35 for 40 channels is a pretty good price point. There are more channels supposedly coming soon. I know there's a add-on package for Showtime and another channel, but I know for me, for example, AMC is a channel I would like, so we'll see if that comes as an add-on package or if they do anything with that or make that an option where I can add AMC and remove other channels, but for the most part, right now, local channels are there, so I can get Big Bang Theory, Gotham, The Expanse. I can watch various baseball games, soccer games, basketball games, and things like that. And they're available after the fact, too, so if I don't get to watch them live, I can watch them later as well. Or if I heard a game was particularly good, I can go back to that later as well. So overall, I am pretty impressed. It is a good first out or first initial release for the service. I'll keep using it as well over time, see kind of how it grows, how it changes, and all of that. But for me, it's not really a bad price tier. I think the Dish Flex Pack is around that same price. It's like $31 or $39 or something like that for a number of channels, but that does also include channels like AMC. So we'll see if for $35 they add what channels they add, or if they make the number of channels available match similar skinny packages from current TV services at the moment. So the website to visit, if you are interested in checking it out, is tv.youtube.com. As I mentioned, it's $35 a month after a one-month free trial. And if you have any, and then in the show notes, I'll have a link to the video review of the app so you can see kind of what it looks like there. And then the website is a similar experience as well. And then it does use YouTube as the backbone of the service, so it does have similar features there as far as the auto quality of the video stream, so if you want to get that control there. And then it has a fast rewind and fast forward button, I think 15 or 10 seconds in both directions, so if you want an instant replay, you can do that as well. And overall, it's good. The streaming starts very quickly, so there's no complaints there. So it all depends on your internet connection as well. So if you're in a low bandwidth area, that's the only downside as well. So I know in my work area, the internet streaming is kind of slow, so it does take a little bit of time for it to start up. But once it starts, it's actually pretty smooth. And the video quality adjusts accordingly, so I had very few hiccups so far. But it's only been a few days in, so we'll see how it goes for this month. So that's Android TV, available on the web, Android and iOS. So with that, I'll jump into this week's entertainment news and the TV show review, and we'll be done for this week. So to start it off with some news, the Preacher Season 2 trailer was released this week, and it's set to air on June 25th, so look out for that. And Fear the Walking Dead Season 3 is set to air on June 4th, so that's also coming up. As far as what I watched, it's the usual stuff of MacGyver Season 1, Episode 19, Compass, Black Sails Season 4, Episode 10, Chapter 38, and that was the Season 4 finale. So we have Flint hiding his treasure and Long John Silver going, kind of semi-retiring. I think it was a series finale as well. I forget what they're doing there, if they were adding another season or not, but if my memory is right, I think it's a series finale as well. I'll check again over this week, see what's up. But I think they ended it in a way that meant that the treasure was being hid, Flint was leaving a life of piracy, and it's set up to bring us to the start of the novel Treasure Island. And then I also had a chance to watch Into the Badlands Season 2, Episode 3, Red Sun, Silver Moon. So we find another clip, or kind of one who's as good as Sunny. So there's that progress there. And then also Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a return. So Season 4, Episode 16, What If? So we have more of, or we learn of, what I'm presuming is the alternate reality, or taking the show at face value as far as Hydra actually winning and everyone living inside the framework. And finally, The Expanse Season 2, Episode 11, Here There Be Dragons. So we learn a little bit more about what happened to that guy's, the botanist's daughter, and then what happened with the attack on Ganymede. So a pretty interesting episode there. So with that, I'll jump into this week's TV show review. And in case you guys are worried, I did watch the Season 7 finale of The Walking Dead, and that is actually this week's review. So Episode 16 was titled The First Day of the Rest of Your Life, and now that I'm thinking in retrospect, the one downside to the episode was I think it felt like a wasted line. I thought that Negan could have delivered that line when he had Rick on his knees after the attack on Alexandria, but that's neither here nor there. I will jump into the review. So the episode aired in the United States on April 2nd, 2017, as a runtime of 90 minutes with commercials. The summary of the episode is, in the season finale, the stakes keep mounting higher and higher as different stories from the season clash while the group enacts an intricate plan. So basically, the episode itself revolves around Negan's going to collect the payment or delivery from the Alexandrians. They're blocked by the road, blocked by the trees that were cut down based on the Rick and the group's plan to slow down Negan so they get more time to prepare. And this is based on the recommendation from the guy from the sanctuary. So we have Negan getting the, or what we realize after is probably a tip off, but we realize that Negan may have known about it, but he understands that there's something going on, and that Rick's group is not following his orders. And then they take Sasha in the coffin in order to make it so that Rick and the group follow his lead, and that they're punished for their insubordination. And we get the big battle of Alexandria since Negan figured out that there's a trap that they disable all the bombs, and that way, and this is also because the new group that Rick made the deal with at the junkyard, they double crossed him and made a better deal with Negan and their group. So Rick is basically screwed, but they are saved by the by two raid groups, one from the Hilltop and one from the Kingdom. So we have a big battle. Even though Negan does escape, we are preparing for a war in the next season. As far as different points in the episode, I did like the trick by Sasha that she didn't really let on with Eugene, that she was going to take the pills and that she didn't give it to Negan. But I did like that she took the pills in order to commit suicide and become a zombie and attack Negan when he opened the coffin. But my only problem with that was, how did she know that Negan would be the one to open the coffin? It could have been his right-hand man or Eugene or any one of the group from her side, from Alexandria or the Hilltop. So that kind of bothered me, that was a pretty big assumption on her part that Negan would open it. But knowing his bravado, that was probably also, on the flip side, a safe assumption. How did Negan not know about Shiva? So that was my question during the attack when the Kingdom showed up, and he was like, he basically was taken off guard by the tiger. But I was helped to realize and remember that the saviors don't actually enter the Kingdom, so they don't actually know that King Ezekiel has a tiger to begin with. So that's how he was taken off guard. But that was a very good reaction on Negan's part, that I think a goddamn tiger, or a holy crap a tiger, something along those lines, of memory serves. The thing that bothered me as well in the episode was they used Rick's "not today, not tomorrow" line again in the episode. So that took away from the drama of the scene a little bit, but I thought they could have done without that, and that they could have more approached it as, you may have the upper hand now, but I don't know, just a different threat instead of using the same line twice, or not using the line the first time, and it would have worked fine here. And finally, as far as a comparing and contrasting of the two groups, Rick's groups are more like surgical strikes because they don't have the numbers, but Negan's attacks work as well because they have the numbers and they overwhelm their opponents. So we'll kind of see how they go in the next season and how it works going forward. I have not actually read the comics, so I'm not quite sure what the next steps are. I may read summaries if I get around to it. I kind of want to be surprised as far as what comes up, but I can't wait to see what they do and how they present the upcoming battles between the two groups, and especially what Rick and his groups do to proceed as far as fighting and taking out Negan. So that's actually all there is for that. As far as the bit of humor I had that Star Wars related, I was watching the news the other day and they were interviewing Donald Trump on Air Force One. I'm assuming it's Air Force One, but on the screen in the background, someone forgot to stop the video and they were watching Star Wars Rogue One on the plane. It was actually the scene when Director Krennic is going to visit Vader at his castle, so I got a bit of humor out of that. And I was particularly entertaining. I was like, wait, what? Why is this familiar? And then the scene changed a little bit, and I realized it was when we got to Vader's castle, so bit of humor there. So if you, I just did a quick search on YouTube for Trump interview and Air Force One or some search, and I found the clip, so it was a bit of humor in case you want to search for it on YouTube. And I actually did watch it originally on ABC's World News Tonight. But that is all for this particular episode. So if you have any questions, comments, concerns, anything like that, you can always email me at headphonesneil@yahoo.com. You can find me on Twitter at PatelN01. All video reviews can be found on YouTube at youtube.com/PatelN01. And of course, all social media links, subscription links, videos, and all of that good stuff can be found on the website at patelN01.com. And of course, if you like this show and want to check out more shows on the Geek.io network, be sure to visit geek-io.net. But that is all for this particular episode. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time.